Very Bad Wizards is a podcast with a philosopher, my dad, and a psychologist, Dave Pizarro, having an informal discussion about issues in science and ethics. Please note that the discussion contains bad words that I'm not allowed to say, and knowing my dad, some very inappropriate jokes.
Did I go back?
In your mind, that's how you went back. Only in your mind.
Only in my mind.
The great and boss has spoken. Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
Who are you? Who are you?
A very bad man.
I'm a very good man. Good man.
Very bad wizard.
Welcome to Very Bad Wizards. I'm David Pizarro from Cornell University. Today we have Tamler and Yoel, so I'm asking both of you a question. Today we're talking about Mr. Robot. At one point, Colby, the CEO of Evil Corp, tries to pay off Angela, and he gives her a piece of paper and says, "What's your number?" So what's your number?
Yoel, you want to take this first?
What would it take take for you to just like throw all of your morals to the side, or to not avenge the death of your parents, or to whatever it is? What's your number?
All of my morality out the window, all of my principles, $750,000.
It should at least be enough that you never have to work again. I mean,
That's how did you calculate your number?
Well, that's enough to we're all out of debt completely. I can help my friends out, and now that I'm thinking about it, I want a little more money. And stuff like that.
You want some nice things. Yeah.
I feel like it should be enough that you could give some away to make yourself feel better about your terribly guilty conscience,
right? Like you could
if you're like $100 million, right? Like a lot of Africans would be stoked,
right?
So you're not doing it for $75 million. That's the thing. It's not. It would be better to have more money, but what's the lowest?
You're trying to talk me down now. The amount.
I'm trying to Jew you down.
I didn't say it.
I learned in negotiations you're supposed to anchor high.
So Yoel, your answer was just really high.
I would just say a really high number. Yeah,
I'd give myself an annuity of a six-figure salary for the rest of my life. Pay off all my any debt that I have, any debt that my family and close friends have. Like I would spreadsheet it.
One of the things that I might do is ask for enough money so we don't have to ask our listeners for support.
That's right. What a segue.
I know. I'm getting good at this after 3.5 years or however long we've been doing it. So, first of all, we want to thank everybody for reaching out to us. We've had a lot of interaction lately with our campus activism episodes, and it's been great. So we really appreciate it. At Very Bad Wizards, at Pease, at Tamler. You can reach us on Twitter, verybadwizards@gmail.com. To email us and our Facebook page, just Very Bad Wizards on Facebook. And you can support us directly on PayPal. Last chance. I don't know if we'll put this out before the new year, but last chance to get that big deduction.
If we picked up any of those, American Enterprise, money bags listeners, feel free. I don't know what the upper limit on PayPal is, but, Tamler's a philosopher.
Do they believe in giving their money away? I thought it was more...
I think that they only if it's a wise investment. And what wiser investment than the stepson of Christina
Hoff? It will not go to waste, this money. Or just shop at Amazon, click on the Amazon link, and then a small portion of whatever you buy after that click will come to us. And we really thank everybody who's helped us out. And
yeah, and thanks for buying the t-shirts. We launched the t-shirt campaign, launched briefly again, and we sold a bunch. And I think that for the next year, we'll try a redesign of and put out some new t-shirts.
Oh, and iTunes. You can rate us on iTunes. I guess that helps. So please rate us on iTunes. And we got our, and it was our 100th review too. Was just,
yeah, it was pretty awesome.
I think it was the best review we've ever gotten, or it's one, it's up there anyways. Anyway, very excited. You know what else? I'm excited. Like, this is going to be, this could be, if this episode goes well, and I have my doubts, but if it goes well, it's going to be a perfect day, because after this, we're seeing The Hateful Eight. Family. And in the 70 millimeter, that road show that comes through, 70 millimeters on projector, film. It's going to be, I'm very, very excited.
Yeah, we don't get that in Canada.
You don't?
Yes. No, they don't take the road show up here. I mean, we'll get the film, obviously, but yeah, not in 70 millimeter.
I thought that since it was on the metric system, it was for sure.
You would think.
Okay, so how long have we been holding this in, man?
A long time.
This has been like blue balls for Mr. Robot. But we didn't say Yoel. Yoel's once again. And this is the first time, though, that it's not a movie episode. This is like we were saying. This is like a 10-hour movie, right?
I was a little worried. I'll be honest. When I went back, you know, I really liked the second season of Fargo. And so I was like, is Mr. Robot going to seem kind of lame now when I go back and do this? And it didn't at all. It completely held up. And it's a fascinating and beautifully shot, beautifully performed.
It's just so well shot. That's even on second viewing. So we've all seen this twice.
Yeah.
And so let's just get it out of the way right now that if you have not seen Mr. Robot, we can't forbid you from continuing to listen, but given how we feel
about
it,
you really shouldn't do it.
We strongly recommend.
Yeah. Turn it off.
Go back, figure it out, watch it. I was able to watch it through my cable thing again, although that's only going to be good for another 5 days. But yeah, figure out, watch the whole season, just buy it, just buy the thing.
Yeah,
and you won't regret it. It's phenomenal.
But I am willing to say that if you are a poor student who cannot afford in any way to see this, that Mr. Robot, it would be internally consistent for you to bootleg the shit out of it.
Sam Esmail, the creator, has sort of just said that. He's like, hey, look, I would be a huge hypocrite if I...
Yeah. I mean, it's almost an in-joke that he titles all of the episodes after a different file format, many of which are very common piracy formats.
I mean, that's just a little taste of the tech knowledge.
You all can out-nerd me. Oh, really? I have a lot of notes. We all have a lot of...
All right, let's dive right in. Dave, you want to give a plot?
I'm going to give the most basic plot outline that will do disrespect to everything that happens. But the show is centered around a kid who is a hacker. His name is Elliot, and... He, from very early on, it's clear that he has some mental instability, and he is planning what is sort of revealed slowly. He's planning a very big hack with some other people, and that big hack is intended to bring down the market system. It is revealed that his strange and weird accomplice is not actually real, but it is an alter ego. That isn't revealed until pretty late, actually, right?
It's
very weird to rewatch it
until.
Yeah,
late,
I mean, they hint at it really heavily even earlier.
Yeah, even after the first episode, people were viewing it as the Fight Club sort of, hacker version of the Fight Club. There's a little team of hackers, and you know, shenanigans ensue. But throughout, there's obstacles to overcome to make this hack actually go through. And at the end, somehow it actually goes through, and we're left at the end of season one wondering exactly what happened, because there were sort of a few obstacles that didn't seem to be surmountable that get surmounted in a gap of 72 hours, mm-hmm. that in which our main character is unconscious, presumably, or at least has amnesia
about.
He's not
unconscious,
we don't actually see it.
He did the thing.
Yeah. He. That's right. He blacked out.
Mm-hmm. So he has dissociative identity disorder, which used to be called multiple personality disorder. You know, the thing with Mr. Robot, who is at least on the most straightforward Reed interpretation of the show, which is the Fight Club interpretation, he sort of inhabits and imagines that that his father, who died of leukemia, because he worked for this big corporation, Evil Corp, that he's been sort of switching between being Mr. Robot and planning this whole hack and being Elliot. And like, Mr. Robot is the ringleader. Elliot, in his own mind, at least at the beginning, is sort of brought in.
Is brought in by Mr. Robot.
Right. Mr. Robot, yeah.
Right.
But they're the same person.
Yeah. You know, I hesitate to even give a psychological, like, you know, whatever dissociative identity disorder is probably can't look like what this is. So it's whatever. Whatever it is, he is. You know,
well,
it's like...
I read an interview where he at least tried to, in the same way that he tried to be as accurate and realistic as possible with the tech stuff, he also did with that.
Yeah. No, I was going to say it's very much like the tech stuff. It's, you know, they're not just making it up.
No.
But the details you kind of have to suspend disbelief because they have a show to make and it's not...
I mean, and there is some... Statistically, people who have dissociative identity disorder have more than two identities. So there, maybe there's a hint if he really was trying to be...
And they black out and they have no memory often when they're the other person, which is very consistent with Elliot.
But what I don't know is if they interact with each other to that extent.
That I don't know. That's a good question. I had that same question. The one thing you forgot in the summary, which is obviously much too brief, is Tyrell. There is this other character who's, you know, probably the main character besides Elliot. Tyrell.
Almost arguably the main character, actually.
Almost
which is
arguably
something like,
the
yeah.
main character. He works at E-Corp and has his sights set on... being CTO, Chief Technical Officer of Evil Corp, that doesn't work out. My idea was to start, we're going to just assume that everybody's seen this and they remember it. And I do think this show has a real heart and it's got, and there's a lot of deep emotion, a lot of really interesting philosophical, moral themes. But let's just start by giving... Like, what if you gun to your head, if your life depended on it, if your $75 million depended on it, Yoel, what do you think is really going on? Like, what's the reality of this show after the first season?
Yeah, I think that it's, as David just explained, so Elliot sometimes turns into Mr. Robot. He doesn't remember what Mr. Robot does. He doesn't turn into anybody else, and the other stuff that we've seen, we can take pretty much at face value.
So the Tyrell stuff, you think...
Tyrell is just a dude? Yes, he's
just a guy.
He's not Elliot. He and Elliot have no relationship other than the one that... It's possible that that Mr. Robot and Tyrell have some backstory that we're not aware of because Elliot wouldn't have been around for it, right? And we don't always see everything that Mr. Robot does. But it's not like Tyrell is just another one of Elliot's personalities, for example.
So how do you explain the scene with Joanna Wellick at the end in the last episode?
She just suspects that he knows something about her husband's disappearance.
And suspects that he speaks Danish.
No, I think that sometimes you just say stuff to yourself in your native language. I think it's cool and menacing to have her say something in a foreign language, but I think you can easily interpret it as she's just talking to herself. She says... Hey,
what was it that she said again? She said...
If you've done anything to him, I'll kill you.
Yeah.
Doesn't it make sense that you're kind of like, that's sort of your own inner dialogue and you're just kind of putting it out there because you know the guy can't understand you.
Without the suspicion that Sam Esmail and the writers have given us throughout, I wouldn't second guess cursing in your native language, or it doesn't seem to me to be that odd either. But given the suspicion that they introduce, so throughout, I think we were all on this ride. Tamler, you were on conspiracy theory bus a little harder core than we were. But
I think
throughout,
still I am compared
you
to
still
you.
Still are, yeah. So for a while, I was like suspicious whether Darlene was a real person. But early on, I think in one of the episodes where we talked about this, I said I thought it would be unfair if it would seem to me to violate the rules that they'd set up if there were if Elliot actually is these other characters. So I'm actually on board with Yoel.
Right.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of unraveling to the mystery, but I think that as far as the identity of characters goes, that's as deep as the mystery goes, other than whether or not they have a backstory with each other. I think Tyrell is a real person. I think he's going around having anal sex with other people to gain their secrets.
Yeah, only for instrumental reasons. Did you get how he checks his watch during?
Yeah.
Checks his watch. Interesting. I don't know. White Rose. Else who constantly checks his watch.
Yeah, sure.
White Rose. Exactly.
I do suspect, though, that that Tyrell, from the very first episode, I think that Tyrell might be in cahoots with Mr. Robot from early on. They have
There's
reason
something
to doubt
fishy
it
about
the,
Tyrell.
Yeah. And I think that the way in which they interacted in the very, very beginning, the whole bonsoir, like trading Linux desktop environment.
Yeah. That was rough.
That was really heavy handed.
Yeah, we should come back to that.
Yeah, we will. I think that Tyrell believes that he is conspiring with Mr. Robot, and at that point doesn't know that Elliot isn't aware.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's a good point, because we don't know how new, like, the Elliot persona is.
There's a quote there where he says, "You've only existed for a month."
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
That's right. That's Angela in the fourth episode. Angela yeah. says that.
Yeah.
To him.
In the kind of dream sequence where he's in withdrawal from opiates, and
right.
basically in that sequence, they tell you everything. It's yeah. amazing.
I'll put Can it in I the give show notes. You... a couple crazy,
let's go. Yeah, yeah.
Crazier than
that. That I read online, and then I'll give you what my theory, which has been my theory all along, and watching it again, none of them totally make sense, but I still like mine. If gun to my head, I would choose mine. So here's one theory that I didn't think of, which is that Tyrell is Elliot, and that Tyrell is actually the main character. So it's really about Tyrell, not Elliot. And
but wait, so I mean, there's a way in which I almost agree with that second statement, but you're saying it because they are the same person.
Right. Well, yeah. So Elliot is in a kind of projection of Tyrell's. I will say, this is the only thing I'll say for this theory, because there's a few things that don't make sense. For example, Elliot comes and sees his assistant, Tyrell's assistant, and Tyrell's assistant doesn't show any signs of knowing him. There's overlapping stuff with Gideon, mm-hmm. where that wouldn't totally make sense, and Gideon's relationship with Elliot wouldn't totally make sense on that reading. And then I do think it takes away from some of the heart of the show, which if none of this stuff with Elliot is real, then I don't know. Like, I think Elliot is a really heartbreaking character, and it would, to have him be Tyrell or even just a projection of Tyrell would take away from that a little bit. But I will say that last scene with Joanna Wellick on that reading makes perfect sense. And
but wait, I mean, I would think that she would react very, very differently upon seeing Tyrell.
I watched it with that in mind. I had read it. So, and let me give you like a couple of key things. So she looks at him at first, and she's told him to get out, right? So she's looked at him. She looks at him at first and is like, "Okay, what are you doing here?" Kind of like, "I kicked you out." And then he says he's looking for Tyrell. And at that point, she sort of looks at him like, "Okay." And it's not totally clear if this has happened before or not. I think the way she plays it, it could be both, but she clearly is like playing along. Like, it reads like she's playing along at first, and she asks him, "Who are you then? Like, who do you think you are at this point?" And then the Danish line if you've done anything to him, I will kill you. On this reading makes sense that she's talking about the baby. She's talking about, like, if you made me, if this baby is hurt in any way because of what you did, then I'll kill you. So,
It feels like such a stretch because of all of the interactions that really require Tyrell and Elliot to be independent people. And I can't read that line as being about the baby, I guess. I mean,
because she has the baby, she's had the baby. Like that, you know, that the more straightforward reading of that is she knows he speaks Danish, even if he's, you know, pretending that he doesn't right now, or that he's flipped his lid a little bit, which she would expect him maybe to do because he completely lost control and went outside the box by killing the wife of the CTO.
What were you working on, my husband?
You've got to help me get out of this. There's something about her. I feel like she can hear us.
Wanted my advice? You know about the hack that's going on right now?
When was the last time you saw him?
She's lying to me. He isn't coming. She's fishing for something.
Not sure. It's last week, I think.
Really? You know, between you and me, I'm a little concerned for Tyrell. Was he acting strange when you saw him?
No.
That's funny. Because he was acting very strange last I saw him. 3 days ago.
Didn't she say he just called?
And then he just vanished. Stuck your arm so slight, are you?
Excuse me? I don't understand what you're saying. You okay?
I think it's just the stress from the past few days getting to me. Anyway, I shouldn't take up any more of your time. Thank you. Ollie.
All right, so that's one. What do you have any thoughts on that, Yoel?
I don't feel like it's consistent with the rules that they've set up, which is that when you see something happen to a character, unless it's something like they're obviously hallucinating, then that actually happens to that physical body, right? So like Elliot's apartment actually exists. So now are we throwing that out, or is Tyrell living also in Elliot's apartment, right, being Elliot? How does he literally work both for Evil Corp and for Allsafe? Like they're in the same conference room talking to each other. It just like, you would have to decide that a lot of that is just, I guess, in Tyrell's head, which would be just a real revision of the rules that they've set up. And I feel like part of what's cool about the show is that if you go back and rewatch it, this is what I enjoyed so much about rewatching it. They are scrupulous about sticking to this. Like, right, it's all perfectly fits.
I agree, except for one thing that's a shift. In the first four episodes, Mr. Robot doesn't really interact with anyone besides Elliot. And then starting around episode five, he starts to interact with people. And then you're supposed to think, well, that's Elliot. So that is the one thing that sort of shifted. But you know, it's a small thing in the end, and it could just be that before that, he wasn't really interacting with anybody as Elliot or Mr. Robot. So
it still, in my head, makes sense if you just magically ported, you know, Rami Malek's body over, you know, superimposed it over Christian Slater's, and every scene, the characters would just be confused as to why he switches his demeanor so often, but it's not confusing in any other way. And I think you're right that there's a shift there. I think that critically in the dream sequence, that's the first time where it gave me faith in their rules, because at first I was disappointed that Mr. Robot was carrying Elliot over to the drug house, and I was like, this is impossible, right, or whatever. And then you realize that they've almost done that to tell you, no, that couldn't, that there's the clue that this was all a dream sequence.
But he carries him to the cemetery too.
Yeah.
Or he carries Mr. Robot to the cemetery.
He carries Mr. Robot to the cemetery.
And
but Mr. Robot doesn't. I guess one of the rules is that if they're both present, it is Elliot's body,
right?
And so the presence of Mr. Robot's body.
So yeah,
is
what's
ethereal.
Different about that scene is they're both interacting,
right?
Yeah. So he's talking to the drug house doorman, being like, "Oh, my friend wants to go in,
right?" And he says, "You both have to. You both can't
exactly,
go in, right?
Exactly."
Right.
So that person is seeing two people.
Yeah,
that's right. All right, let me give you the other one that I just came across today, and this is something that honestly never occurred to me in all. And then I'll tell you mine, which I think is just right.
It was Bruce Willis all along.
And it's not even that radical, but the idea is that actually Mr. Robot, the father, is the real character, and Elliot is the projection. So this is his way of dealing with trying to reconnect with his dead son, who I didn't read this in the conspiracy theory that I found, but I guess like he pushed the kid out the window and the kid actually died. He wasn't just in the hospital, and so it's Christian Slater that's real, and Elliot is the new persona of Christian Slater. Now, so, you know, you remember that line, you were just born a month ago. I mean, would totally fit with that, you know, this idea that Elliot is just the latest projection of Mr. Robot. I haven't actually thought about this very much because I just came across it. So, then the other thing with that would be, and this is devious, but, you know, it's something I noticed watching it the first time, and I noticed watching it again even more prominently, that big reveal where Darlene turns out to be his sister.
Yeah.
She doesn't say, and at no point does anybody else say that she's his sister. So on this reading, she would be his daughter.
Hmm.
And it's and the way that scene is filmed where she says, "I'm your," and he like interrupts her, essentially, right. Like kind of cuts her off.
Right.
And he's like, "She's my sister," like he's trying to save this persona. The other thing that fits with it, I mean, it's funny. This is a real insight into conspiracy theories, because once you get an idea in your head, a lot of things fit.
But it is. But why would Angela have become such BFFs with the father?
That's weird.
That is weird. And even in that conversation, she says he's had a hard month, and then Darlene says had a hard 20 years. Like the past 20 years, which, I mean, it's not inconsistent
that
with just talking
since
about the last
the boy
died.
Right.
Yeah, but right. But
yeah. So I don't love that one, because there's nothing better than going back on the rewatch and watching Darlene's interactions with Elliot.
Yeah, so cool.
Yeah,
Like it's very sister. Brother,
yeah, you don't the scene where she's getting out of the shower and she's just like wearing the towel or whatever. Like, if that were your dad, I mean, come on.
Yeah, and she's like proud of him for what he's accomplished in a way that seems like glowing sister, not like, you know.
And also the way Gideon treats him is almost like a stand-in father.
Right. It'd be weird for him to be like,
Because this would be literally somebody about Gideon's age.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Well, he likes men.
it actually would even, you know, I'm gay, right? Would sound like very different to Christian, said to Christian Slater.
All right. So I'll give my theory, which I believe I've given the first time we talked about this on the show. There's a lot of things that don't make sense, but a bunch of stuff that does is that Tyrell and Joanna Wellick are just other projections of his parents. So in other words, like he has this sort of double conception of his father, and I don't know like what the timeline would be on that, whether the father worked as a executive for Evil Corps or something like that when he was growing up or what. But the main thing that made me always think this when I first watched it was the similarities between Joanna Wellick and Elliot's moms, in the little glimpses that we get of Elliot's mom, it does kind of seem very similar to Joanna Wellick character.
I mean, actually, his mom is to me angry, and Joanna's cold. So aside from just being shitty people, I
she says something after he died. There's that scene between the two of them, and she sort of says that he was weak, that she has contempt for him. And that's a very Joanna Wellick-like. Yeah. Then the baby would be Elliot, that, you know, and her...
But here, do you mean projection as in literally he's creating these people in his imagination?
And like they don't actually exist?
Yeah.
Well, so...
Because if you mean thematic mirror, they mirror his...
No, I mean like his projection of how shit went down. So yeah. How he was born, for example, right? He was born early.
And his dad was fired and no one knows why.
Right. And his dad was fired and doesn't know why. And there's this other sister. So here's the thing that...
Oh,
daughter,
wait a second.
You find out about that Joanna
Wellick
had.
Wait a second. This would almost suck, but you caught the Back to the Future references,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So here
and the other movies that they're going to see, Pulp Fiction and Time Cop, right?
Yeah.
It's like
he's literally dressed up as the doc.
Right.
Christian Slater is in one of the flashback photos. Back to the Future 2 is the favorite movie. So yeah. it could be baby Elliot, his father Tyrell, fired for unknown reasons. Starting the computer shop in the 80s it's a stretch.
The last thing though, Darlene would be that daughter that was born.
Yeah.
That she tells Tyrell about. I mean, I think it's a projection based on like what he thinks the memory would be. Obviously he couldn't have been there, he couldn't have seen himself be born and all,
but that's why I think though like just ontologically, like they either exist or they don't exist. As like if they don't exist for real, then the plot completely fails, right? Like then there is absolutely no point if they don't exist for real. So
well, why though? Like, what does Tyrell add to the plot?
I mean, we've spent all this time getting involved in the lives of these people who are just like a fantasy of Elliot's.
Right, like
I would be annoyed.
Just Tyrell.
Like a submissive dominatrix, pregnant, sex.
His whole drive to get to the top, you know, like that stuff is, to me, it would be much less interesting if it was like, this is Elliot's weird imagination of what happened to his dad.
Right.
I disagree because it's like this stuff, some version of this really happened. Exactly.
No, I know, but it would have happened in the past. So what's happening in the present? Like, he's just making it up in his mind? Like
did Elliot's dad go beat up hobos, for example?
And have sex with tech?
This is what happened, infused with his, like, he's clearly movie obsessed and a lot of his projections are like movie sort of themes,
I guess,
like the American Psycho episode and the Mulholland Drive episode. And
but what is, I think what I'm missing is what you mean by projection, like a lot of his projections, because it's one, if you're just saying that they're just fictions of his imagination, then we do see a lot of weird interactions of their lives where Elliot's not present. Like, you know, him like trying to seduce the wife of the new CTO, where it's like, well, what's
maybe
the
there's
point?
A story where that happened. There's a story. Maybe that's
so
why,
this.
That's one
so
of the
this is all in
he
his.
He got
so we're literally seeing his imagination.
But of real events.
But we can't be seeing them of real events. I mean, in the past, like then his current interaction with those characters is weird.
Let me give you the last piece of evidence for this.
I want the for this.
Hear what you have to
the
say
for this
it,
is like I'm still not clear what the for this part is for. Like
for my
no I know, but I don't.
Joanna Wellick is really his mother, and Tyrell is another sort of version of his dad. I noticed this the first time, and then I watched out for it again, and it's even more prominent. In that scene with Joanna and Elliot, she, right as he leaves, she kisses the baby on the head, like a really kind of tender kiss on the head. Later in that same episode, when they're up on the Times Square screen, and, you know, that happy family is together, and again, no sign of Darlene, by the way. Where's Darlene in all of this? Where's Darlene in all the pictures? Where's Darlene in all the family pictures? Not there, right? But she, in that Times Square screen, she kisses his head in exactly that same kind of tender way that she kissed the baby's head.
So what's puzzling me about this theory isn't those things that you say. Those make sense. But for me, like, if it's all in his imagination, then it's like a real disappointment. The only possibility that I can think of is that he's literally traveled back in time to stop the events that caused his father to die.
Wait, so he is in the future?
Yes.
And he's come back.
Right. And so he's interacting. The baby is little Elliot. That's his real mom. He has sort of like time travel, foggy memory. And he's confused, like in the way that you might expect after, you know, we all know time travel is hard on the mind. Because then you actually have a world in which he's interacting with these people in a meaningful way.
So then, he travels back and then what? Gets a job at Allstate?
I think so. I think that he has some vague plan in his head about how he would do this in the future. He goes back and there is some sort of just fogginess about it. And what's happening is he is reinterpreting. He's rebuilding the plan in his head from like the fog of time travel.
But then people know him, like Angela knows him. She remembers having grown up with him.
Yeah. And also, I mean, I would be really disappointed if it were time travel. I would be disappointed if it were time travel.
That would be crazy. That would be quite a twist, but that would be ridiculous.
Yeah. But I just can't see him hallucinating the whole Tyrell subplot and having...
No, I get these.
But there is a time thing. There's some time fuck up. Yeah.
I mean, time is a central theme.
There's something.
I mean, it might just be like he wishes he could go back and prevent his father's death. It doesn't all have to be a hint to some plot that we haven't been told about yet. And in the same way, I think those like parallels between the way Joanna is acting and the way Elliot's mom was acting, like it could just be there are some thematic parallels that they think are cool rather than they're hinting that these are actually the same people.
Yeah, yeah. If it were,
which is itself sort of cool, like that art is a craft. And so it starts to blend in with the sort of invention of the main character. Right. Who,
if it weren't for the mind fuck that he gave us, like we would just read it as like cool parallelism, if that's the right term.
But why isn't Darlene a central part of the childhood as we sort of...
So here's what I'm afraid they're going to do, which I also think would be super lame, is Darlene is actually Joanna's first child and she was adopted later, which is why she's not in any of the older pictures.
Wait. Yeah.
So Darlene had a baby. Joanna had a baby, which let's suppose is Darlene. She gives that baby up for adoption. If you suppose that Joanna had the baby early enough, Darlene could plausibly be that baby. And then somehow she's adopted by Elliot's parents. And he's forgotten because he's forgotten his personal history that she's not his biological sister. She was adopted maybe later after those pictures were taken, so she's not in there.
Although it would be weird for after the father's death for the mom to adopt another kid. And you sort of assume that the dad died right around the age of those pictures.
And she even said the parents were nice, not just the mother was nice. Like the parents seemed nice.
Yeah.
That's what Joanna said.
Now, I'm not sure how much room there is in the timeline.
Right.
Like maybe if you're like, oh, there's a couple years in there where they could have adopted Darlene post pictures pre-death.
Yeah.
I mean, how do some random Americans adopt a Danish teenager's child? I have no idea. Also, it would just be not everybody has to be related. So I would hate it.
I think,
as just like this
soap
really soap opera kind of twist. Yeah.
Also, Darlene would have to be much younger than Elliot in that case, right? Darlene would have to be at the very least 8 years
That's
younger.
That's plausible to me, right? I think the actors are probably – like how old is Rami Malek? Like
in life?
I think he's like 30.
How old is he supposed to be on the show? Do they say his age?
I don't – not that I remember.
No. Significantly, no.
Yeah. So Darlene sort of seems young and bratty. She could be 21, 22. Yeah.
And he was born in 81, which means he's 30,
You could be 30-ish. It could work.
Yeah.
Right? And oh, you love it. I can see it in your eyes. And Joanna. Joanna, if she had the baby at 13.
15.
At you 15. Weirdo. She said 15.
You pervert.
We all know Danish women don't get their periods that young.
All right. So then she could be in her mid to late 30s.
Yeah. I think
keep in mind, I think it's
I would be disappointed. And what really I've loved about this show is that they managed to pull off the gimmick without making it too gimmicky. And they've also managed to avoid the pitfalls of just making the show about gimmicks. And this is where I think the themes, and maybe we should talk about some of the other characters and the plot in general, but there are some themes that make, upon second watching, it made me think that the plot of the show is in some ways all secondary to what one of the things that the show is trying to say to us. Yeah. And
all right, let's take a break and come back and talk about
Before we do the break, can we do one thing? I was just thinking, I am a little more convinced that Joanna knew Elliot somehow when they met that last time. She just seemed too like she knew him. But it's also possible that Mr. Robot and Elliot had a relationship. Mr. Robot and Tyrell had a relationship before Elliot was in the picture.
Right.
She's all like, "Oh, that guy that I've seen talking to my husband, and now my husband has disappeared, and this guy reappears.
Right.
What
that
is
weird
up with
tech
this
guy?"
I think you have to assume that at minimum.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And that also would explain Tyrell and Elliot's first interaction better, which is not the interaction of two people who
And why does he keep saying bonsoir in the middle of the day, you know?
Which is also his father also says c'est le monde, like both sort of bad attempts at speaking French.
All right, let's take a break.
Let's come back and talk about themes and characters after this quick break.
Right on.
Welcome back to Very Bad Wizards. It's the long-awaited Mr. Robot episode.
Hey, are you sure we want to do Mr. Robot? We could talk about the Oberlin cafeteria.
the Oberlin placemats.
It's not the placemats. The appropriation. The appropriating
sushi. Yeah.
And this whole cultural appropriation thing just doesn't make sense. Like, I can't see anything like... Like, that's just, like, that's, like, a good thing about the world.
So I was trying to think of, like, a sense in which that's a defensible complaint. I would think, like, you know, what happened in the early days of rock and roll, where, like, black musicians would write these songs and then white people would become famous and rich playing those songs. Like, that counts, maybe.
I consider that just stealing. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I guess you don't need a fancy new word for that.
It's a hate crime is what it is.
But nobody is doing that. Like, nobody's getting anything stolen from by, like, the it's self-parody at that point. And this is the thing that, you know, like, I wish Vlad would at least criticize, like, some of the most extreme Oberlin examples of it. I think it would give the movement more credibility if you didn't sanction every ridiculous thing that they did.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's turned into one of these moral disputes where, like, you really have to dig in and not give an inch. I mean, your stepmom was the same way, right? Like, this is war, and you can't, you know, you can't admit that the other side maybe has a few reasonable right. points.
Maybe.
Yeah, I think you can, though. We do.
No. Well, you can't.
Yeah, but you guys
can,
aren't like, but you're not.
You all saying that it's just like a signaling strategy now, like this, like, sort of being,
yeah.
being, well, you're not saying it's a signaling strategy, but I'm adding to it that it's also a signaling strategy that, like, you, once you outline the territory, giving an inch is like giving a mile, and so you don't want to give.
Yeah. And you guys are like, I think of you as nonpartisan, whereas,
right.
yeah, Vlad and your stepmom are definitely partisans. Yeah,
they have dogs. Yeah,
that's right. All right. let's turn to the themes of the show.
Okay. Yeah, we're cutting this out, aren't we?
A lot of us were looking back, but I guess my favorite thing of going back to it was just looking at it
as a work of art, as a standalone,
and of the characters. Dave, why don't you start? What were some of the themes?
So what struck me was what I think is actually a brilliant tying in of two things: the sort of hacker culture and this view of what human nature is, and essentially the themes that we keep running into over and over again are, you know, human beings as programs. There's over and over again analogies of, you know, debugging and hacking, the sorts of social engineering that he does to manipulate others by exploiting their weakness, right? So exploits, demons, you know, daemons are processes that run in the background that you really have no, you know, has at some point, he's like, you know, it's almost out of a page out of social psychology that intentions don't matter at all. These daemons are background processes running. It's giving right. you a very computational view of the mind, but one not using the language of modern cognitive psychology, but rather that of hackers. And they show over and over again, I think, what are watching this all in a binge of, like, literally last night and this morning, there are time after time instances in which somebody just destroys another person because they know they know the exploit, right? So like we get some really harsh examples, like of when they're at the Steel Mountain facility, and he just destroys that tour guide by exploiting, like, he says, you know, you don't matter, right? When you're we see Colby nearly destroy Angela by saying just the right thing, right? These are all, it's like finding the weakness in the software and exploiting the vulnerability to be able to manipulate. I wrote down a few of these. So Bill Harper is the tour guide.
Yeah. He's great, that actor.
Yeah, it's amazing.
What's great is when Angela turns it on Colby and kind of destroys him. You think that she's about to break, but then she flips it on him, and yeah,
she does. That's such a great scene, like that. And that's she's really good. That Portia Double Day, and just her face, like, and she gets up, and it's like she's gonna be defeated, and then she sits back down and kind of leans back in her chair. And it's a really, really right. cool moment.
Tyrell tries to just do the same to Elliot at the beginning. Tries to destroy him by, but then ultimately Tyrell gets completely owned, right, by his boss in what is one of the most awkward, you know, scenes in which you just see somebody unravel before your eyes, right? Like, he just gets everything. It's like, but basically, like, the theme is, if you know exactly where to push someone's buttons, much like a vulnerable piece of software, you can watch it unravel. And I think that what people's weaknesses are in each case is really interesting. So Elliot's weakness for revenge, or to avenge his father's death, is what led for the failure of the hack the first time, because they gave up Colby when they shouldn't have, which made them vulnerable, which made them put the honeypot in the server, which, what's his name, put the honeypot in the server. Gideon. And so everybody's weakness is essentially just a view of human nature. The pettiness of, you know, it's a human thing. So much of what Eliot talks about is that weakness. And I think this ultimately is why the CEO at the end, when Angela's asking him, how can you be so comfortable? The reason he's comfortable is he is so reliant on human nature building up the same system again because of their weaknesses, that as long as you know what human weakness is, it's not that the conglomerate has all of the sort of the physical assets or the fiscal power. They might get destroyed, but as long as you know how to exploit the vulnerability in the human software, right, then you'll be okay. Like, people will be greedy no matter what. No matter what F Society does. Yeah. To me, the conglomerate, you know, and including White Rose, they're fine. They're going to be fine because they feel confident in their knowledge of how to exploit humanity, right? They're all in their cushy room. And I think that Angela, I wonder what you guys think about Angela's character. I think that this is an instance of them wielding their power over humanity. They just made her an offer, and she took it, right? And
I don't think we know what Angela's thinking right now.
That's one of the big
things she's doing. I mean, that's certainly one possibility. And I think the moment that turned her was probably going to the lawyer's office and getting told she wasn't needed there, and essentially getting kicked out when she had sacrificed her career to get this case back on its feet. So then she's like, well, if that's going to happen, then fuck it. I'll just...
And you see her use her new power when she tells the guy she wants the new Pradas.
The shoe guy.
Right.
I think that what's interesting about her is she's kind of cold much earlier than that. Like, she's very cold about just bringing down Allsafe. She's extremely cold about really screwing over her boyfriend, who, all right, he cheated on her, but still, like, once she finds that out, it's like he is done and she has no regrets, no like visible...
So you're saying it's okay to cheat on a spouse or serious
on Angela
girlfriend?
She didn't seem that into
that guy is honestly. That guy is
I think they're
actually like, can we talk about Ollie and how one of the biggest douchebags?
I only have 48 followers. But it's growing.
I'm gonna use it's that growing. That's
some taste
that's
makers.
What I was gonna
there's
use
some
the opening
there.
Quote for this.
He was, you know, sometimes their characterization is a little bit over the top, and I get
totally over the top, but
it's just like he's just like such a douche.
The Groupon. I got a Groupon.
What were his likes?
But finish what you were saying, that she was cold. Yeah,
she's just cold all the way through. Yeah, so it's not clear, she's been turned by this, by the evil corporation. It's maybe that's just... She
but her motivation
her
earlier on...
Is she a young Joanna Wellick?
From early on, she wanted the revenge the death of her mother. And it seems as if she has sort of been turned, and to see her use her power to exploit, right? Like to find the weakness in the guy who was trying to chide her. And she's like, you're a fucking shoe salesman.
Yeah. Or maybe she's really the person that you don't want on the inside.
No,
maybe they're biting off more than they can chew with her.
I think that maybe season two is we find out that she is the Trojan.
So
but,
I have
but
a little
she
bit
seems
of a different
genuinely like curious about the CEO and genuinely a little bit impressed by him too, that he's handling it with.
I have a little bit of a different take on what the show thinks about being able to manipulate people, because to me it seems that the people who think that they're the most manipulative and the most clever, Eliot certainly, Tyrell certainly, Terry Colby, they don't do well. So Eliot has this like gaping hole in his self-knowledge where he thinks he knows everything about everybody and he doesn't know the most basic things about himself. Tyrell's plan just blows up horribly. And Terry Colby ends up getting outplayed by Angela. So I think you can see it equally as a story about like the arrogance of thinking that you can manipulate people.
At some point.
Control. Exactly.
That's a separate theme, that there are these forces and you know, the idea of control. I mean, I think Eliot even says that with the psychiatrist, but the idea that there are these forces above us. I'm a little bit like a Greek tragedy or something like that. You know, when you make plans, this is actually a line from the show. They don't like say it explicitly. God laughs. That ultimately, if you think you've figured humanity out, then you're probably fucked.
Yeah.
That's a kind of hubris that the show doesn't.
So they actually explicitly refer to the hubris of Tyrell at some point. And I just want to say there's a little bit of a, we haven't talked at all about Shayla and her boyfriend. But
yeah,
Vera is obsessed with name
shit,
memes. And he's saying, you know, what does your name mean? Fearless, which is ironic in the case of Elliot. But Tyrell is a name that comes from the Norse god, which is Tyr, which, by the way, is the day of the week Tuesday is named after that god, if you ever wonder. Wednesday is Odin's day. Hmm. Tyr is a god, Norse god, associated with law and heroic glory, portrayed as one-handed. So he has the name of a god, and he has the hubris of a minor god. and I think that's right, that every human has an exploit. But that's why the CEO, who up until now, and White Rose, seem to have not... We don't know their bug yet. We don't know...
No.
I'm saying just from
what... White Rose is not White Rose, though, in the final scene.
Yeah,
he's a woman when he talks Elliot, or she's a woman and a man when.
It's interesting, like, to think about how we're meant to interpret that. So, like, I saw some people writing that White Rose is obviously a trans woman who's like passing as male, and I think that would be the least interesting take. I like the idea of somebody who just flips back and forth between genders. Depending on the situation.
Yeah. Like, don't even question what the true nature of his gender is or hers is, but rather that this is one of his ways in which he either exploits others or just simply situationally appropriately will dress, according to...
Yeah. Another interesting theme that I thought was very prominent throughout is loneliness. And there's a kind of crushing loneliness to Elliot's character. And this is why I don't want him to turn out to be some sort of fabrication. But there's a crushing loneliness and an inability to connect with other people that runs throughout the show, that he explicitly says sometimes when he's talking to the psychiatrist. He has trouble, except on... probably significant exceptions, he has trouble having physical contact with other people, hugging them. He hates hugging people. He seems to be able to hug Angela.
And he fucks Shayla, but we don't know if they hugged.
Shayla. One of my favorite moments in the whole show is a scene with Shayla. Like, they're just starting to like each other. I think it's right before they kiss, actually. And she says, "So you want to know about me?" And he starts doing this thing of like, it's like, I know everything about her. And it's this thing, it's this thing that they've repeated. Like, it wouldn't work as well if they hadn't repeated it throughout the show of like him just going into this long diatribe about who this person is.
And, right, like Sherlock Holmesing them.
Yeah. And then by hacking them, and she cuts him off. She like interrupts his like internal monologue and just says, "No, not the stuff that you can see online," and gives him something that he genuinely didn't know. And it's this beautiful moment of actual connection. And
the quilt. She shows him the quilt.
And she shows him the quilt. And again, this is a very tangible thing. It's a very, and then it leads to their kiss, which, you know, you didn't up to that point know that he was capable of anything close to that. And so I thought that was just a running theme, and sort of the heartbreak, the emotion, the heart of the show is this lonely guy crushed by his loneliness and tries to deal with that in ways that are both destructive to him, destructive to others sometimes, even when he has good intentions. A lot of times he tries to help people and ends up hurting them. And, that's the thing that moved me the most is Elliot and his isolation from the rest of humanity.
Right, but there is this one interesting sort of irony to his self-pity early on that I was a little bit heavy-handed, like emo Elliot. But I think that this is another one of his mistakes, is in thinking that he's the only one who feels this way, right? That this is somehow like the, what are, you know, when he's like, what do other people do, you know, when, like when he's crying, and I'm like, they also cower and cry, like they, you know, like who doesn't feel that way, right? This is, his psychology is
but he's
is
at a
very
different
egocentric
level.
He is, but everybody on that show, we just don't see their inner pain, yeah. Right, in a way that we know, because he's the narrator. He doesn't seem to appreciate that other people probably, in fact, suffer. You know, we don't know the suffering of Shayla or the suffering of...
And there's no, like, happy, well-adjusted character, really.
No. Gideon comes the closest.
Yeah. Gideon's boyfriend. That guy's like a saint.
That boyfriend seems insufferable.
Hey, by the way, I just happened to glance down at my notes, and I found some great evidence against the Elliot is actually his dad theory, which is that Darlene in episode 2, when she comes in to use a shower and then puts on his clothes, says, "Can I borrow your clothes? My dress has cum stains on it."
That's right. Good point. I think that puts that
yeah, we can
to
put
rest
that to rest.
Right there. Although
in episode 3, there's a funny moment where Elliot's almost happy, right? And
that great montage.
The montage, and you hear that shitty Len song, like "Steal My Sunshine." Uh-huh. And he's like, you know, "I can lead a bug-free life from now on." Like, and he's all like fake happy.
All hard things on Instagram.
He's got Starbucks.
He's got the Starbucks, yeah.
Did he come in with a star? But there's a bunch of stuff where he's, you know, he's talking about like, "Never show them my source code." There's part of this analogy that starts getting a little bit old of, you know, hacking and source code and all that. But I think that it is not a bad way of somebody like Elliot understanding human psychology.
Well, another like sort of theme that recurs a couple times is the idea of self-hatred and the power that gives you. So Vera says that, like...
Right.
"You remind me of me when I was younger. Depressed and sullen. Matter of fact, tried to kill myself a couple of times. Never could get that shit right. Biology wasn't my strong suit. I hated myself, man. Still do. Thought that shit was a weakness for a long time. Then I realized that shit was my power. People walk around, act like they know what hate means. Nah, no one does until you hate yourself. I mean, truly hate yourself. That's power."
It's this, like, if you hate yourself enough, and you see a lot of these characters seem like they're self-hating to one degree or another, like Colby, and like, you can be immune to some of the things that the more vulnerable characters like Shayla are not immune to. You become vulnerable, that's something that can ultimately bring you down, and the self-hatred is like a shield against some of that. And I, you know, that I think is, I don't know, like it might reflect some of the techie stuff, but like I think that's a real human story.
Is that how you use your self-hatred as a shield?
That's how he's risen as far as he has.
Yoel, what's some themes that you, on your second viewing? You didn't watch it, did you?
I haven't watched a single episode. Yeah, I guess the thing that jumped out at me was more like the arrogance of the powerful, or the people who,
right,
you know, who think that they can control things. They, like you said, you plan and God laughs.
Yeah.
And
but you know, but they execute this hack, and they could have left it like that. What are we to make of the final scene where there's this room of the super powerful?
Oh yeah. Oof.
Right? It's like,
Well, you again, know, but, talk about a stylized scene also in terms of the way it's shot.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way that it really looks like that.
Right. But it does look like that. That's
it's like a vampire movie.
Yeah. Yeah. The like supervillain house. I don't know,
it's
like
very gothic. It's like Wuthering Heights or something. Right.
Well, let's talk about why is White Rose part of this cabal, like helping out in the hack and then chilling with the CEO?
They have to set up something for season two.
Oh, that's not the answer I was looking for.
I mean, to be honest, it felt a little bit like, ugh, like they now have a lot to navigate. The show kind of rides this edge of being like not exactly straight realist, but like never straying too far from what might be plausible. And I feel like once you get into the like super villain, shadowy group conspiracy, it like.
Yeah. And why White Rose would be both helping out the hack and hobnobbing with the.
Yeah, it's just getting a little too far.
You guys aren't going to like this, but one interpretation is this is how Elliot imagines. This is how he imagines they would react to this because he sees them in binary terms.
But
I think it's fair to say whatever the reality is that it's coming through him. Even when the stuff is really happening, it's his energy that casts a stylized shadow over whatever's happening.
So I was trying to figure out whether or not. So here's an obvious canary for whether the unreliable narrator is giving us the information, and that is when it's called Evil Core, right? So it's E Core, and obviously the media is not. Like the commercials, they're not going to call it Evil Core,
but they do.
But they do, except for, and this is in the very beginning. In his conversation with Tyrell, Tyrell actually calls it Evil Core when he's pitching him the job at the beginning of episode two, and that was another reason I thought like that he was in cahoots with Mr. Computer.
That doesn't seem like, number one, that's a great example. The boardroom, the 11 lawyers, like they don't really look like that. That's not how like those boardrooms really look.
But Elliot is in that scene. Like whenever you see something distorted, you see it through his eyes.
Right. I feel like when we're watching, you know, Tyrell fuck his wife with the gag ball in her mouth, like that we're not seeing it through Elliot's eyes.
Yeah, I think that's supposed to actually happen.
I think we are.
You think, but no, you're just wrong about this.
So Tyrell, well, we'll see. But I've been proven, I've been told that I've been wrong about a lot of things on this show that
you were not right about it.
I said he was his father all along.
I did too.
So did everybody.
So did everybody. Yeah. That's the one and only thing.
People didn't say that he was the father, not as early as I said it. In fact, like we have a lot of emails of listeners making fun of me for that speculation. But anyway, just set that aside. That episode two, I have a note on that scene. He gives him this choice, like, come with me. Like, this is a big choice. And that whole episode is about choices.
Wait, say again, what scene?
So the scene where he's offering him the job.
Oh, yeah.
It's a very intimate scene. He's like, I want you to be here with me. And it sounds a little bit like a father or an adopted father or something. Like the way it's presented to him, like a kid has a choice between which parent to join in a divorce, or it could be like which body to inhabit or which person you want following around. Do you want Mr. Robot or do you want me following you around?
This is all such confirmation bias on your part.
Go back and look at that scene, that first scene, and it's a very intimate scene. And the idea that that's just supposed to be an objective picture of how like this thing went down is insane. Like that would be much weirder than anything I could imagine.
No, but what Yoel and I were saying is that because that scene is through Elliot's eyes, that of course it doesn't have to be real. We're saying when Elliot's not present or Mr. Computer or Elliot aren't present, that represents things that are actually occurring. That if you have the whole show be...
No, not the whole show is Elliot's imagination. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that his imagination colors the real events.
Yeah, no, that's, but I, that's what I'm objecting to, that his imagination could color scenes in which he's completely uninvolved.
Great. I think that's like, I'm pretty confident in that judgment that we're seeing this as, at the very least, through Elliot's kind of mentality is how we, is how the, you know, like the composition of the shots, the music, the, like, well, I think that it's very stylized in a way that's consistent with Elliot's character.
Yeah, I mean, insofar as, like, Elliot is a creation of a person who, like, put a lot of himself into him, I think that's fair to say. Like,
right.
Yeah, I don't
but,
know.
But
I
you think, just used the so. Other argument that. For Tyrell. Like, you just used an argument that when Tyrell is being shot, it's completely yeah. different. Like,
because, like, so, that's how Elliot, well...
But no, no, but now you realize you're using two completely conflicting points to try to argue for the same thing, that, like, it is Elliot's imagination because it's all stylized and shot in the same way, and it is also Elliot's imagination because Tyrell is shot and stylized in a very different way than when Elliot is.
These events could be really happening, but it's as if we're seeing them through Elliot's fevered mind, and the events themselves are really happening, but it's always through this filter of Elliot and his mentality.
If Elliot were narrating it, I would buy that.
Yeah,
he does
a little bit more, but he doesn't narrate the scenes where he's where he's not involved, right? So he's not like a he's not telling this. If he were
and in general,
story,
like the scene with Darlene and Angela in the club.
Or where they make
out. You think that they didn't actually make out?
Well,
I want to believe that they...
Yeah, that's the right. Mulholland Drive episode.
No, but I mean, that's in his fever. That's in his, like
so you're willing to admit that that didn't happen, but that we...
Specifically because that episode breaks the rules by, like, giving us his, like, feverish withdrawals. Like, I also don't believe that the fish talked...
Right, no, but that's the fish. That's different. That's not that he's in that scene.
Yeah.
But I don't see that episode breaking the rules in any other. There are things that really happen in that episode.
Yeah, but I think that there are clear brackets between his withdrawal, right? Like when he starts going into withdrawal and gets in bed, and by the time he comes out of it, that everything that happens in there, like, is pretty much just...
There's a callback to that scene. She says, tell Shayla I say hi in a way that, like, makes it seem like something happened between them.
So now you're arguing the other position?
No, I'm saying that it's consistent with everything that I'm saying. That it's...
But we know that they know each other.
A young kid, well, not a young guy, but a lonely guy who watches a lot of porn and loves movies and loved probably Mulholland Drive.
He would love Ex Machina, too.
What's the overlap between people who would nominate Back to the Future 2 as their favorite movie and who like Mulholland Drive? I feel like that's a very small intersection.
So you're saying that's more Rami Malek than...
Yeah. I think it's you're not supposed to take the whole thing.
He loves Back to the Future, too.
Does he? That movie is terrible.
Sam Esmail.
Yeah. That
Back to the Future
2 is not a good movie.
I agree.
Back to the Future 1 was brilliant. Yeah.
I just don't think you're supposed to take anything, like, completely literally. In the same way that the computer hacking is kind of unrealistic... some of this stuff looks kind of like magical realism, but can you read into like what's supposed to be happening in Elliot's head? I don't think so. I think it's Sam Esmail thought that this would look neat. Like, I think that's all the explanation you need for a lot of it.
I guess those two things are in some ways similar. I think he's consciously filming it in a way that it makes sense that this would be filtered through Elliot's head. But if they're similar enough people,
I would argue they are. Like, I think,
but there is a meaningful distinction there, and I'm led to wonder how a director would shoot a movie to make us believe that it's not in Elliot's head.
Well, I think you could shoot a lot more straightforwardly.
But I'm not sure. Like, it can be cartoonish, but I don't know why its cartoonish nature is a product of Elliot. Yeah. And
I think you'd have to be a little more explicit about it. Like, we shouldn't talk about Fargo, but like the the last episode of Fargo, where they like set it up that way, where they're like the character's exposed to this, and then you see it happening in reality later.
Right.
Like, I feel like if that's what you want,
says it over and over again that we're seeing everything through him, and that like we have to trust him. Like, go back and watch the first episode, that opening monologue.
Who says
all he does is like tell
Elliot
you
does.
Essentially,
Elliot
like you can't trust anything that you see.
I think that holds for like when Elliot is there. But it just doesn't make any sense.
That's one possibility.
Okay, I guess we'll see. Hey, in the few minutes that we have left, do we want to talk about the tech aspects? I feel like...
Yeah, let's talk
quick,
a little bit
about
that.
I got to stop in like 3 minutes.
We'll be fast. So, David, overall...
I could get off, too.
Overall grade? No, no. We need you here as the regular person.
Come on.
The normal person.
The regular guy. Overall, best I've seen at Hacker, and there's even some in jokes there about like some director is going to be fucking up the heck.
Yeah. No, that was cute.
Right. Like they show actual user interfaces.
Uh-huh.
They make an effort to like talk about Raspberry Pi and KDE and GNOME and Linux and
what's a honeypot?
DDoS is a honeypot is a trap to lure somebody in. What it sounds like you put in something that's juicy and lure the person in. And so they come in, and then you catch them.
They're stuck.
Way. Yeah, it's like a honeypot. Like you could imagine putting a bunch of kiddie porn pictures on a server and just seeing who hits it.
Yeah,
and that way
that's
you
what
catch.
He does in the first episode, kind of.
Yeah. No, in the first episode, he actually had kiddie porn pictures.
Oh, right.
I mean,
and he caught it.
I think like this term gets used pretty loosely, but the way that I'm familiar with it being used is not so much like you get them somehow, but like you set up a server that you think people are going to go for, and then you watch the traffic, and then you can see like, oh, it looks like people are trying to get into our network from here. So you can just block them. It's less about like, oh, now I've caught you in my clever scheme. It's more like you want to be aware of what people are going to try and do. And so you set up like a very tempting target and you just watch it and you see what do people try and do.
Right. Yeah. That makes sense.
I do have to go, so you guys are going to have to do this alone.
Oh, Tamler.
How about this? Let's wrap up here. We'll play the outro music, and Yoel and I, for anybody who wants to stick around after the outro music, we'll geek out a little bit.
After show. Yeah, that's great.
After show. All right.
All right. Merry Christmas, everybody. It's Christmas Eve. And
it is Christmas Eve as we're recording.
A belated Happy Hanukkah.
Yeah, Happy Hanukkah, guys.
Happy Hanukkah, happy holidays, Kwanzaa, and Festivus.
Thank you, Yoel.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yep.
The great and honest has spoken. Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
Who are you? Who are you?
A very bad man.
I'm a very good man.
So the first episode tries a little too hard with the whole...
Yeah, know what Syracuse said about that, like the GNOME KDE thing? Like two car guys being like, does your car have tires? My car has...
Totally, I remember hearing that.
That was dead on. That was like, because it comes so early on, I was like, oh God, this is going to be ugly. Is it going to be?
It's going to get ugly. Yeah. There's an something I didn't mention in the regular portion, which is Tyrell's accent is the most annoying sort of like Euro accent that is. It reminds me of in Family Guy, like. Two immigrant guys who've been here just long enough to speak English, but they like fuck up like some of the things they say in a way that clearly betrays. So that they talk very much like this, and they say how many of dollars would it cost, or like so, shit like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, oh, it was so long, man. It was like 2 meters. It was like 2¾ meters long, like. But he has that. So when he says like, oh, I see you're running GNOME. I run KDE myself. I guess old habits die hard. Like, it's like, oh, the double cheesiness was like, hard handle.
Yeah. Yeah. His accent is weird because it's sort of like you say, it fades in and out. Yeah. Sometimes he just sounds sort of off. Like, not like he has an accent, just like he sounds a little odd.
Yeah, totally. Like me trying to fake it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, so anyway, that was a low point, obviously.
Yeah. And but from the very first episode, I was happy that they actually used terminal Windows. Mm-hmm. Like, they didn't try to give us any fancy interface.
Yeah, it wasn't like the 3D flying through, Gibson.
Right.
Like hyperspace.
Virtual opening file.
Yeah,
cabinets.
Totally.
Or like those big old interfaces where it's like enter hacked password.
Yeah, totally.
Hacking now. 3 minutes remaining until crack.
Yeah.
Password.
No. So, but that gets to the point of you were saying this is the best tech that you've seen. And I think that's true, but it's such a low bar. It's
a super low bar. So here are some things that I like. So showing us actual shell, like actual terminal Windows. There are actual like commands being entered. Mm-hmm. Like they have to like explain what DDoSes are. And they do a fairly good job of avoiding like too much exposition. They try to work in, right, like it reminds me of the Star Trek when like they'll have somebody give the technical explanation and then somebody else will be like, oh, like riding a surfboard down like exactly, Geordi, you know.
Yeah.
And so there's one instance of that. It's like getting fucked by like a
Yeah, the weirdly
super sexualized. Like, that wasn't even a helpful analogy.
Yeah, no, that was... I feel like at first I sort of cringed with it, and I was like, oh, no, that character's weird. He's like a weird, inappropriate nerd, and that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. It's unfortunate that they use the Asian sort dude. Of Asian guy.
Yeah, that doesn't work that.
Right. So I like that. I like the little shout-out to Raspberry Pi. Mm-hmm. I like that, they make reference to 256-bit AES encryption. I think if they went too far, it would be boring. I love the little 404 not found.
Yeah, that's cute. That was cute.
It's cute. There was nothing that like made me. I guess because the bar is so low, I'm just happy that they reference like real encryption.
Yeah.
Right. Like. I doubt that a Raspberry Pi behind a thermostat could actually melt tapes, and that there wouldn't be some sort of
some sort of physical override that says like
started getting really hot in there, that there wouldn't be an alarm that would go off, right. And that people would actually like, it seems like you would have some sort of like a system that wouldn't allow for such an easy takeover of something as critical as the temperature in a server farm or whatever. But and then there's another thing that seemed...
Well, the password hacking was like that. I mean, they just needed it
never,
for the
it
plot,
never works,
but yeah.
Yeah, it never works that way. Yeah. Like, I mean, at least they showed when he's trying to like brute force, he fails a couple times, right? Mm. Like he just doesn't get it right.
Yes.
Oh, it's for the boyfriend, for the fake boyfriend.
The douchey fake boyfriend.
Yeah.
Where he tricks his information out of him, which was, that I thought was very cool.
Yeah. There's good social engineering.
Yeah, that was cute.
Right. And that's what I like about it is that it shows that, most hacking never isn't sitting in front of a terminal window, but it's actually the social engineering part.
But then, how did he get into, Shayla's email and Facebook or his therapists or like lots of
it was easy. It was her year of birth backwards. It's like that wouldn't be something that you just guessed. Yeah. And so it would have to be brute forced, and then you wouldn't point out how easy it was.
Yeah.
Right. So, So unless people have their passwords written on a sticky note, or like you really are running dictionary attacks, like I seriously doubt that it would be that easy to get into someone's email, right? Like he would have to, like they never you would think he would have whatchamacallit, the keystroke logger,
yeah,
or something. You know, they could easily have done that. Like he puts a keystroke logger in his therapist's computer.
Right. So sometimes they made it look like, now I don't remember exactly whose password he was hacking, but they made it look like he had a password file and he was throwing like a dictionary attack or something on it.
Yeah, he was throwing a dictionary attack at somebody.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you know.
Well, where'd that password file come from then? But you know, at that point, I feel like you're sort of nitpicking, right? Like.
Yeah. 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 You. Right. Right. So at the end, the hack that does end up working is not the original one, like to melt the tapes.
Mm-mm.
And right, well, the original one was to explode the server farm or the data center.
Yeah.
Then it was to melt the tapes before it gets sent to the five. But what does happen is it's a remote attack on that encrypts every single file.
So my understanding was that he did take out the tape backups, which were by that point at multiple redundant sites.
Yeah. So how did he do that?
By the Raspberry Pi somehow allowed him to hack into the network of the company that happened.
Airstream.
The Airdream or whatever.
The Airdream, yeah.
Right. So he
Airdream.
Hacks into their like corporate network, and that allows him to turn up the heat in all of the centers simultaneously.
See that, and then he encrypts the
and then he the encrypts one. The you know remaining copy of the data
in the Chinese.
The Chinese thing is separate. So, like, I think it's the honeypot server, right? It's CS30 that comes into play again. So he needs that server to be like back onto the Evil Corp like main network, which
right.
is what.
So it's the local. He encrypts with 256-bit AES. He encrypts all the local copies, destroys the remote copies.
Yeah, and then the Chinese people destroy the Chinese ones, and then boom.
Right. And they destroy the Chinese ones, or they encrypt the Chinese.
Not clear.
Yeah, it's unclear. There's so I was like a little bit disappointed at not hearing it, but I guess that's part of the gap of 72 hours. It was a little weird that he was like, and it turns out that all we needed was like Darlene to write a script in 2 hours to like encrypt all of the local stuff.
Right.
Which is like, I guess, you know, like, I mean, it was a little Deus ex machina to be able to hack into the thermostats of every, like, why would those be? I mean, I don't know. I guess so. Like, there's where I just don't know but it seems as if you could hack into the thermostat company and, you know, like hack into Nest servers and actually like turn up everybody's heat at the same time. That's a pretty fucked up, like.
That's a bad design.
Vulnerability. Like, that's a pretty bad design. Like, where you can't have, like, somebody would be able to tell, is it getting hot in here or is it just me?
Right.
And then just go up to the thermostat and just, like, yank it.
Right.
So yeah, it's.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it, you just kind of have to take it on faith that some magic happens. I mean, also that, like, once their local copies are encrypted, like the only other copies of those files that they have would be these offsite backups. Like, I mean, even when I worked at a company of 25 people, we had like our main file storage was on this thing called a NetApp that like automatically would keep old copies until it ran out of space, right? So if I'm like, I'm going to change this file, it would save the changes, but it would also allow you to revert to the previous one, right? It's not a tape backup. It's just like the way that file system is set up. So like we, company of 20 people managed to do that. You think like the biggest, most powerful corporation on earth doesn't have some sort of like automatic rollback for the files on their servers. Like,
right. What's it called? What's it when you back up only the new stuff? What's it called?
Yeah. Like incremental.
Incremental backup.
Yeah.
And that there wouldn't, that they would only have these like five storage centers and the network infrastructure and not have like a bunch of the data just like on whatever,
like just on Joe from accounting's laptop.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, like there's like critical information that would be, you know, and that's exactly why like people are able to like hack into, you know, schools' databases and get everybody's
right. Because oh no, we did save it all to this USB drive though.
Right.
So, yeah. So we're all good.
The world's the other things that maybe are less techie but somehow like you have to suspend your disbelief is that the stock market, so one, that conglomerate's data is the backbone of the entire world's economy.
Yeah,
right, that like somehow getting rid of Evil Core's database destroys everybody's ability to use their credit cards. Like there wouldn't be other banks that anybody would put all of their eggs in the one basket.
Yeah, right. So
like
this is
internationally.
The point that I was trying to make, I think inarticulately to Tamler, is this: you can't just take it all at face value, right? Like there's some like kind of magical suspension of disbelief stuff where you're like, this is the biggest, like most important, most evil conglomerate there is. It's like, well, but yeah, that company doesn't actually exist though. Yeah, so
I know, right. But it's his projection though.
That's obviously,
it's all you know what? It's all Sam Ismail's projection, and that's exactly the same explanation that Tamler is offering.
Yeah,
like, it doesn't buy you anything unless you don't care about the internal internal coherence of the story.
Right.
So that it would all turn on Evil Core's database. So no other banks that would be independently running or whatever, the financial system. Two, that that the stock market is still up and running.
Yeah, I know. Who runs that software?
Yeah, like that they're actually like Evil Core's shares are plummeting as
nobody
as
can take every, money.
Nobody
out of
can
the ATM.
Actually take money out of the ATM, but like
the stock exchange
the stock exchange is still going.
Yeah,
and it's like just a different layer of virtual. Like, what also bugged me is like the little spiel by Christian Slater, by Mr. Computer at the end, where he's like, you know, for the past 100 years, ever since we gave up on the gold standard, it's all been fake. And I'm like, the gold standard wasn't any more real than greenbacks.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's all fiat, right? Like whatever value you put on this particular bar of gold that really matters. I mean, there's no physical resource in one that sense, but like,
yeah. You know. So I am a little sorry that we didn't get into this with Tamler, but like in some ways this show endorses some really like just bad crank ideas, you know, like being able to lend and borrow money is a bad thing, you know?
Or
like, let's go back
erasing
to the gold standard.
Everyone's debt is like justice.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, no, you're just going to make it more expensive for people to borrow money in the future. I mean, that's what you meant. Fine.
Well, and I think that's why the corporate overlords are not too distressed. That's played up a little bit too, but it's like, well, you know, like people, it's not like people aren't going to want to accumulate more than they can afford. And like, it's just, we're just going to have to like, you know, I feel like they have the time machine backup. They have the one time machine backup. Then they're just going to like call it like less evil corp. and start up the whole system anew, so they're not too worried.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So not tech, but what do you think of the like very obvious debt to Fight Club? I mean, so much so that there was even you caught the thing that Where Is My Mind?
So I didn't mind it. I think that. There is, in a Tarantino-esque way, he is taking an idea and making it new.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the story is new enough that it's not biting.
Yeah.
Right. Like I wasn't bothered by it. Like another way of putting it is, from like the very first thing I read about Mr. Robot was that it was sort of Fight Club meets like a Hacker World, and that didn't ruin it for me.
Yeah.
Right. And so I liked it. I think that it was, and in fact, it leaves you sort of asking the right questions and being surprised, like when you go into it, even thinking that it's the Fight Club.
Yeah.
I don't know what it would be like had I not read that. Like, would I think, I'm pretty sure I would have suspected that Elliot wasn't real from the, I mean, the.
Oh yeah. No, I didn't read that, but it, you know, it was obvious.
Yeah. Something that is techie, great. And I think they talked about this, wherever podcast Syracuse was talking on it, was the Mr. Computer, computer shop, and like the 80s tech, and his, like, you know, what you want is a Pentium 90.
Yeah, that was awesome. That was beautiful.
And he's like peeling off the labels of floppies to resell them. Like,
yeah. No, that was excellent.
That was super well done.
Yeah. So clearly, I mean, it's obvious that like people involved in the show, like, they're nerds. They care about tech. And if they don't always like nail the details, or like they bend plausibility because, you know, the plot needs to do something, like, that doesn't bother me. Like, an entirely realistic show about computer hackers would probably be fairly boring.
It would be just like watching some guy drinking Mountain Dew and
typing, right? And eating typing pizza and typing
for like 43 hours.
Yeah.
But it doesn't, so here's what I can say about the tech, is that it doesn't patronize the audience. Like, there's only a few people who will be, you know, some people might be like, Gnome, really? Like, but, you know, but, yeah, but like, but it doesn't, it was able to tell the story without being off-putting to people like Tamler.
Yeah.
But without like being, you know, if you want to find out more about what a DDoS is, like, you can. Yeah. And whether or not DDoS is the right attack to describe in that scenario is less important than the fact that like they're using real, like,
It's, I was surprised that the honeypot thing didn't throw him, because it's sort of a major plot point of how are you going to get this machine back on their network. And they do, like, that's kind of a big deal in the show, right? It's not just a throwaway.
Tense moment when Elliot is trying to, like,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So is it just like, you know, you get the idea that like he has to do something with the computer and doesn't want to get caught, and you don't really have to understand the details? Or
I think all you have to know is that the valence of what Gideon did is bad,
right?
And
he's going to try and undo it.
Yeah. I think that's all you have to know. And they do, you know, they did a good job of subtly showing, and I actually don't know, you would know better, whether or not the visualization of the server network is an actual UE. Like,
I've never seen that. I mean, there's these like visual network information systems that like you can buy that show like graphical representations of the network and stuff. So it's like, again, it's like not too far out of line from what you
might see.
It was
well done in that it looked like it actually might be low level tech stuff. You know, it wasn't like an app.
It wasn't like you're flying through 3D buildings.
yeah
It was close enough. It was close enough to be plausible. It was like, it wasn't insulting,
right?
Which is what matters.
And you know, I've not read at all whether anybody has like paused and looked at the code on, because there's a lot of code in the background, and I bet you there's probably like Easter eggs there from pretty early on, like when you actually bother to look at the code on screen.
Yeah, so apparently when she's on IRC with the Chinese hackers, they actually, those Chinese characters actually are, you know, they translate to real statements about what's going on.
That's really cool.
Isn't that badass?
That's really cool. That's the little details.
Yeah, well, the same way that like when Joanna talks in Danish, it's like, you know, it means something.
Yeah. There was, I was laughing at, I don't know, I don't know if this would be, whether like non-nerds would catch this, but you know, as we know, like if you're in data recovery, you're trying to recover data from a hard drive, you're in a clean room, right? And it's really important that room be a clean room.
And there's a guy smoking in the clean room,
like eating a burrito. It's just eating a burrito in a clean suit. Or like a burger, whatever it was. I don't know. And And then White Rose is like smoking a cigarette in the clean room. Like,
yeah, that was hilarious. You're doing it wrong.
That's not, clearly they don't care.
Yeah. No, that was cool. I had thought about that until you mentioned it, but that's great.
I thought it was a neat little social engineering hack to toss USB drives in the parking lot.
Oh, that was cool. And you know what? Rachel told me that they're told never pick up a drive that's like lying around out on the sidewalk and taking
That's cool. That's really cool. Like I said, like the coolest hacks are like, you know, when he uses like, can I borrow your phone to call my mom, and then he saves his number and all that. Like,
Yeah. I love the, so when he's in the data center, and it's not the like next level customer service person that they had expected. So they have nothing on her and they just have to send her a text blind. They just send her, what is it? Like, I'm at the hospital.
Our worst fears.
Yeah. It's like,
it's so great.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Really
like
cool.
All human beings will like respond.
Right,
to that.
That's
like,
gonna freak anybody out.
All you need, you know, she's kind of this age and she's married, you know, and like middle-aged black man being in the hospital, like, you know, it's like playing on some stereotype there, but you know,
with a grain of truth though.
Yeah, it's like it's diabetes, isn't it?
Or heart trouble.
It's heart trouble, isn't it? something this is again not tech, but I love it when Joanna is, when they're at the new CTO's house, like, and she's listening to him go on and on about wine, and she's like, it's not the time, she can't drink wine, and then as soon as he gets up, she totally chugs. Did you catch that?
No.
She totally like, when no one's looking, she chugs the glass of wine.
That's hilarious.
Even though she's pregnant.
I totally missed that.
The one social engineering thing that I didn't find too plausible was what's his name giving out fake rap CDs and like,
oh yeah, right,
and Ollie actually like taking it and actually putting it in it is like, and you get the funny Twitter like line or whatever there, but like, but would you ever really like just get someone's fake CD and put it in? I mean, get someone's like handing out rap CD, put it in your thing, and like keep trying to play it, like if it doesn't play.
Yeah, it really like it hinged on Ollie being like comically stupid.
Totally. He is like the dummy ex machina.
Yeah. Which is sort of the whole point of him.
Yeah. Dork ex machina.
Yeah. I mean, does it seem crazy to like, so if they just want to get into AllSafe, like, does it seem crazy to hang out outside the AllSafe building and try and give people CDs that have malware on them? It sort of seems like the USB drive thing to me.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I guess so. Like, maybe it's just like my like image of like a pan hack. Like, there is something about the USB drop hack that is like, oh shit, like my luck, like I found a USB
sweet
versus
free drive.
Somebody peddling me like their rap CD,
right,
like with like some fake hip-hop like spiel that he's like
yeah no that's true, and definitely like after it didn't work the first time, the fact right. that
Maroon 5 Maroon 5's latest album.
Yeah.
Like, check out new collabo with Maroon 5 and Blink 182.
Yeah, see, so this is how I know that Sam Esmail as a nerd is just the like cartoonish stereotype of Ollie, you know, the dude who beat him up in high school.
Totally.
Obviously.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He's just such like a total unredeemed douche. There's nothing. No complexity, nothing good about him.
Nothing. Yeah, it's funny that the most shallow character is like the person who is most normal, like in quotes, air quote normal.
Yeah, no, he's basic, as the kids would say these days.
What was I going to say? There was. Oh, so the another thing I guess Sam Esmail being a nerd has to be like why this is true as well, is that we didn't get any, like, you can imagine the bullshitty beautiful mind visualizations that you might get when you're trying to like explain to somebody how Elliot sees the world. Mm-hmm. And like, luckily you don't get even, you know, even the, like the shitty Sherlock Holmes movie, the Guy Ritchie one where like time slows down.
Yeah, yeah,
Sherlock's
yeah.
calculating all contingencies.
Right, right, right,
like,
right.
You never get any of those tropes where like you're trying to get into like, you know, it's just internal narration. It's internal dialogue, like not.
Yeah. Yeah. The more you think about it, man, there's a lot of ways to do this poorly.
Yeah, exactly. I think that like it's a huge compliment to say that it didn't fuck up. Like,
right.
I mean, right. That's like a positive, like a, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you imagine? Yeah. You can imagine just all of the ways that like, Michael Bay version of this story, the script could have gotten so ruined in the wrong hands. Yeah.
I mean, I wonder if part of it is just like there wasn't the budget to do like the, you know, CG numbers floating around in the air.
Maybe, but then again, you know, they're shooting in Times Square and stuff, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's good. You know, I got to give props to USA for taking a risk on such a nerdy.
Yeah.
Right? Like.
Yeah. No, I was actually talking to a friend of hers. Is an exec there, and so they are apparently super stoked about having decided to go with it. I mean, for obvious reasons. I mean, I'm saying like this is a big trade secret.
Yeah,
like, they're excited. They're shooting the show.
But no,
that's
revealing. I mean, because like obviously any successful show, anybody's gonna be happy, but like they're acknowledging the risk and the payoff.
And
I remember when I first heard about it, and they were streaming episode one on YouTube for free, like months before it premiered on USA.
Right.
And if it weren't, honestly, if it hadn't been on YouTube, I would have seen USA Network and dismissed it.
And the name of the show.
Yeah. That's right. It could have been, USA Network presents Mr. Robot.
Right,
and you should be
like,
oh, fuck no. Yeah. Like, this is going to be horrible.
By now we've gotten used to the name, but it is not a good name.
It's not a good name. And I cringed when he said, "I am Mr. Robot." Like I didn't like that. Like,
yeah.
But this is something that we didn't point out in the earlier thing. Our after show is going way.
Yeah, late. No, it's gonna be. It's like the same length as the regular. Totally. We can cut though, right?
Hey, we
like,
can cut. We can cut. Yeah. But if people stung around this long, they want to hear.
Yeah, that's true.
The first couple of times that robots are even mentioned, it's Tyrell talking to himself.
Don't be a robot.
Don't be a cold robot. Yeah.
Yeah. Man, talk about another like kind of obvious debt to American Psycho.
Totally.
Yeah. But again, I feel like because they're so, he just puts it out there.
It's homage.
It's homage.
In a way that like, again, like Tarantino's heavy use of, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Kung Fu and black exploitation and all.
Yeah. That's a nice tie. What is it? Brioni?
Yeah, he's one step away from pulling out his business card.
Seriously.
All right, man.
All right, this has been great. Thanks so much for having me on.
Thanks for geeking out.